Oh, Lord, I love a bluff oyster. Look forward to bluff oyster season. If you can afford them, that's something you could actually save up for. Such a special flavour, that bluff oyster, you have one and it's like going for a swim in the sea. You get the flavour of the sea. And it seems very, very peculiar to New Zealand. What the hell is a bluff oyster, though? Why is there a season? And is it special to New Zealand? Are they only found here? I've got a ton of questions about bluff oysters, and so I found a bluff oyster expert, and her name is Zoe Hilton, and works for the Cawthron Institute. Zoe, thanks for your time.
Thanks, Graham. It's lovely to be here.
What does the Cawthron do?
Well, we do research around all things coastal, marine and freshwater. So we look at ecosystem health, we look at aquaculture, we do food and water testing, shellfish toxin testing, all manner of research to do with the coastal marine environment.
Good for you. Okay, to some bluff oyster questions. Are they only found in New Zealand?
Surprisingly, no. They are actually native to Chile and New Zealand, but it looks like they did evolve here. So they looked at the fossils and the genetic evidence, and it looks like they probably evolved here, and then somehow, maybe on a large piece of pumice or something, they managed to raft across 7,000 kilometres of water across the Pacific to Chile. So they form quite an important aquaculture industry and harvest over in Chile too.
That's a long way to go. They couldn't have just floated there as, whatever you call them, smelt?
No, they're very unique among flat oysters in that they look after their babies inside their shell until they're ready to settle. And so most baby bluff oysters will settle just a few metres or even on the shell of their parent. So they definitely are not going to make it 7,000 kilometres away.
Far out. So it's just a bit of luck that Chile's got them as well.
Yeah, they were some pretty lucky sailors, those little oysters that made it there.
Did Maori eat them? Because it looks as though you have to get some sort of dredgy thing to haul them up. Were they available?
They certainly were. They were absolutely precious to Maori too. And they're known as teo or teo paruparu. They do definitely occur in middens nearby to where they're found naturally in beds. This might be surprising to you too. They're actually found all around the country and can be found right up into the intertidal. So when I was a student at Auckland University, we used to go out and collect them from the Manukau Harbour at an extreme low tide. So they're all around the Manukau Harbour, around the Hauraki Gulf, all down the coasts. There were huge populations in the Nelson-Tasman area, Tasman Bay and the Marlborough Sounds, but those big beds around Bluff and Fovo Strait where there's just this incredible abundance of them.
So not quite enough to make the song and dance about it that Bluff does, because they've just got so many.
It's interesting though, because there was a real song and dance about it in other places too, because I looked up the Nelson, the local history here, and so everyone thinks of them as Bluff oysters. But the commercial harvest actually started in 1860 in Stewart Island in Bluff, but it started just a little bit before that up here around the top of the south. There's a Nelson newspaper from 1845 that lists bluff oysters on the price list at 9 pence per hundred. Wouldn't that be nice? 9 cents per hundred. They actually had oyster saloons here and in Invercargill and all over the place. And the thing to do in the 1850s and right through to about 1910 was to go down to the oyster saloon in the evening and have an oyster supper where you could get fresh oysters daily and then they'd be cooked in every single way imaginable. And it was totally the thing to do in the mid-1800s right through to the early 1900s.
God, I want one now. Okay, are they harvested from natural beds or farmed or both?
Well, actually both. A lot of the harvest was from the natural beds, and so there was a huge harvest top of the south and down in Fovo. The fishery in Fovo, which is also really fascinating, it started out in Stewart Island. The natural beds came right up to the intertidal, so the early fishers would go across in their sailboats, hitch up to at the high tide, and then just shovel the oysters into their boat as the tide went down and sail back. They were so abundant down there. But then by about 1877 was the first closure of that fishery because they'd shoveled them all off. And then they discovered these deeper beds out in Fovo Strait and they started to use hand dredges, and then they got bigger and bigger dredges and steam power, etc. that's when the fishery kind of moved into Fogo Strait and they discovered these enormous beds. And that's when it really started to centre around bluff and when it became known as the bluff oyster. And that was the beginning of that highly managed and wonderful fishery at Bluff, which has been this amazing fishery for over 150 years.
But they are farmed as well.
The farming was done for about the last 30 years. There were quite a few farms around Marlborough Sounds and Stewart Island as well. But at the moment, there's no farming going on because of a little very, very annoying parasite that arrived about 7 years ago.
Oh.
We had to take the farms out to stop the risk of this parasite getting from the farms into the bluff fishery. So, yeah, that's a real shame, but hopefully not forever.
Was there always a season for them?
Yeah, I think they actually began the season in about 1866, because our first ever piece of legislation around fisheries was the Oyster Fisheries Act of 1866, and that was designed to protect the oysters and herring, and people then had to buy a license to fish them and things. And I think that set up the season.
Why is there a season then?
That comes back to their amazing biology, because they actually brood their larvae inside the shell and hold on to their babies until they pop out and settle next to the adults. That's very unusual for shellfish. So they actually breed from about spring through to late summer. The season opens in March and closes in August so that they've got time to get ready to reproduce and so that we're not fishing them out while they're preparing the next generation. So that is why.
Right. They are a molluscan kangaroo.
Yes, exactly. They're great parents. They're the best parents of the shellfish world.
How long do they take to get to harvest size?
That depends on where they are and how the food conditions and things are going. It can be as quick as 2 years, but in Fogo I think it's around could be up to four to six years.
There are some shellfish I've heard up in the North Sea that are about 400 years old. How long old can these things go? Does anyone know?
We think definitely up to about 8 years old. And other oysters can live a long time. Like the common Pacific oyster that you'll see around are thought to live up to 20 years. So it could be longer. Probably not hundreds like those Northern Hemisphere ones that grow incredibly slowly.
Let's get back to the diseases. So this is a new thing that made the news, relatively new arrival, this parasite. What's the parasite? Anyone got any idea about how it got here and what does it do to them?
Yeah, it was a recent arrival. It was first detected in 2015. It's called Bonamia austriae, the new one, but we already had Bonamia in the fishery. So we have an endemic Bonamia, and it's a little parasite, a tiny, tiny, what they call a microcell parasite. It gets into the oyster's blood cells, so it makes them really sick. So it goes in and it uses their energy to reproduce itself in their blood cells. Yeah.
Oh, God.
Not very pleasant, but perfectly safe for humans.
Okay.
We had an endemic Bonamia, and that had caused problems since about the 1960s. So there were, from time to time, it caused big disease outbreaks and we had to close the fishery for a while to let the populations recover. Mm. But they do, they manage. And then what happened in 2015 was this Bonamia austriae, which was originally from the United States and then got transferred over to Europe and infects the European flat oyster as well. It arrived here. And it was the first time they'd seen it in the Southern Hemisphere. So we have no idea how it got here. You know, it could easily have been on a boat hull or something like that. Yeah, but we'll never know how it got here.
Does it affect the taste of the oyster? Is it like, I know you want to pull up on harvesting them because you want to save the population, but if you were to eat an oyster that had this gremlin in it, would it taste bad?
No. You can't even really tell by looking at them that they've got it. It's not changing the bluff fishery at the moment. We're still harvesting them as we would because it's not there. It was just found in some farms nearby, and so they decided to take the farms out to make sure that it, or to lower the risk of it spreading into the fishery.
Oh, I see.
I mean, oysters are like humans. They get lots of different diseases, but most of them aren't particularly troublesome. There's just a few like that, or like the Pacific oyster disease that came in 2010 that causes some big catastrophe because they're new. And it's a bit like COVID, right? In a new host, things go a bit crazy, but over time, it gets less and less virulent, and you can sort of learn how to work around it.
Yeah. People listening overseas that haven't been to New Zealand for a long time, I'm thinking expats will be going, oh, I'd love a bluff oyster. Why don't we export them? Do we?
Well, we did. We were exporting the farmed ones. So the market in New Zealand is actually so big that we eat the entire annual harvest, about 12 million oysters. So New Zealanders love them so much that we don't need to export them because we'll just eat them all happily. It was prohibited to export them for a long, long time. But you can export them now, and the farmed ones were being exported and were being produced for export markets as well.
Right, but essentially farming's over for now.
Just for now, yeah. It's on hold.
All right. What about other, just briefly, other oyster species in New Zealand? I understand there is an invasive one. You go to the coastline, you think, oh, this is lovely, this is how the coastline would be, but there are invasive oysters that you would run across.
Yeah, that's right. The one people will probably be most familiar with is our native rock oyster, Sacrostia glomerata, it's called. And that's actually also not endemic, but it's native to New Zealand and Australia. And it's farmed over in Australia. It's known as the Sydney rock oyster. So if you've been to Australia and eaten the delicious Sydney rocks, they're the same as our native rock oyster. But they're only found sort of in the northern half of the North Island. And they were also farmed around the 1960s. They began to be farmed quite extensively. But the Pacific oyster, or the Japanese oyster as it's also known, that came in around about 1970, and they started to grow all over the farmed ones. They started trying to get rid of them and knock them off and things, but then they realised they grew about three times faster and bigger, and they taste amazing, and there's already a global market for them. So the farmers switched, and now you will see them all around on sort of the intertidal shore. I think they got down to Marlborough Sounds in the South Island around about 1977. But they haven't wiped out the native oyster because they do grow a little bit lower in the intertidal. Luckily, they haven't wiped out the native oysters. But the funny thing is, farming-wise, now there's interest in starting to farm the native oyster again because, like over in Australia, there's a massive Pacific oyster industry, but there's also a Sydney rock industry because they've got a more sort of concentrated strong flavour. They're smaller, but they're much stronger flavour, and a lot of people prefer them. So there's now interest in starting up a New Zealand native rock oyster aquaculture industry again. So sort of go full circle.
Well, it's really handy. This Pacific oyster, the invasive one, has found a niche which doesn't threaten the biodiversity of our shellfish necessarily.
Indeed. But there's a funny story about the flat oysters, the bluff oysters, because there's a little population of them over in Wales. What happened with them is that Bonamia, the parasite that we were talking about before, when it went from the United States over to Europe, it really knocked back the European populations of flat oysters. And so some researchers over there thought, I wonder if we could grow the New Zealand and Chilean flat oyster instead. It might be more resilient. So they collected flat oysters from New Zealand and Chile, and they took them over and they put them in the sea near the Conway research station, and this is in about 1958, and they did some experiments on them and they found that no, they couldn't grow them instead because they got all the same diseases and they grew a bit slower, so it wasn't going to work. But they're still there. And in 2012 there was a student doing their PhD thesis on whether they actually should be worried about them being an invasive species over there because they're doing really well. So there you go.
Who would have thought?
There's Wales. Bluff oysters in Wales.
Oh, off you go. Expats that are living in Wales. That is amazing. And to think some of them had to float, honest thing, to get all the way to Chile and then breed there. That's an amazing story as well.
They're wonderful wee creatures.
Thank you very much for the Bluff Oyster 101 and some fun facts. Zoe Hilton from the Cawthron Institute, good for you.
Thanks, Graeme. It's a pleasure.